Oh yeah, real lifers, citizens of the world, welcome to the Real Life Global Movement, where our mission is to inspire, empower, and connect the world through English.
We believe that English should be a fun and enriching part of your life that you can practice and enjoy whenever and wherever you want. Are you tired of boring lessons that suck the life out of your learning? Are you ready to step up your game and become a kick-ass English speaker?
Well, we're here to guide and inspire you on your journey to true lifelong fluency. It's time to stop just learning English and start living it. Ken again, aw yeah?
Aw yeah! What is going on, boys and girls, people from all over the planet? This is Chad from Real Life English, where we believe that listening to podcasts is a fun, natural, effective, and...
tranquil.
Or...
dopalope.
Way to learn English. So download this podcast and listen to us while you're stuck in traffic.
Meditating.
Shaving a gorilla's back.
Hula hooping a gorilla's back.
Doing yoga.
Shooting some hoops.
Or waxing your surfboard. I'm joined here today in the studio with my two fellow real lifers, Mr. Justin Murray and Ethan Wanger. What's going on, gentlemen?
Oh, yeah.
That's not an answer to what's going on.
That isn't. It's an answer that explains everything. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Doing well.
Okay.
Justin's a little bit sore. He's having some trouble answering.
Oh yeah, why is Justin so sore? What's been happening with Justin?
What does sore mean?
It's after you work out a lot, your muscles generally are sore.
Painful, right?
Yeah.
It's a pain.
It's not like an intense pain though. It's kind of a...
Well, it can be intense.
I guess it depends how...
Your body hurts. So I played basketball last night.
You were shooting some hoops, you might say, like Mr. V said in the intro today.
Yeah.
What does shooting some hoops mean? Or to shoot?
Well, you said hula hoop, right?
Yeah, I said hula hooping.
A hula hoop is it's like a round ring, right?
That's correct.
That you swing around your body. How would you say that?
Yeah, it sounds pretty good. I think it comes from like the Hawaiian dances, the hula.
Yeah.
They dance and spin their body around and they gyrate.
Yeah, so you dance and it's a circular... object or toy that spins around your body. Right?
Exactly. That's what a hoop is, right?
Yeah, so shooting...
That's why Justin's so sore, because he was hula hooping all night.
No. So shooting, to shoot, is like you shoot a soccer ball for the goal, right?
Or shoot a gun.
Yeah. So you what we're talking about is basketball, because you shoot the ball in the hoop.
Mm-hmm. And the hoop is...
It's the round, circular object, right? The goal.
Yeah.
For the basketball.
Yeah. So you were shooting some hoops last night, and now you're kind of sore.
Yes.
Nice. Excuse you. And sore can also be the past of see.
No. In Australian English, yes.
No?
I think this is how you pronounce it, right?
Yeah, sore. I have a sore leg, and I saw a movie last night.
Wow.
But isn't that sore and sore?
That's because they pronounce the W with an R sound many times.
Sore. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But you could also soar like an eagle.
Soar like an eagle, yeah. You can also saw down a tree. Right?
No, it's saw.
In American English, what's the soar like an eagle?
Soar like an eagle is like fly. Mm-hmm. Glide.
It has another reference, which could be to he's really soaring, like he's successful, and he's what's another good synonym for that word? Any ideas? To soar?
Flying high, it's kind of like you can think of it in a metaphorical sense of being really up there.
True.
Powerfully flying. We're going to powerfully fly through today's episode with a topic that we're all really excited about.
Wait one sec. Ethan, did you really shave a gorilla's back?
Someone I know, man.
Okay,
it's a friend of a friend of a friend.
Excellent. Okay, Justin, today's episode, what do we got for these guys?
Well, we're going to be talking about a practice, something that has all really impacted us, and definitely makes the world a better place and more people that do it, and it's meditation.
Great.
I think maybe 70, 80 episodes ago, Trevor talked about this in his podcast when he left the Real Life English Project to pursue his own project, right?
Mm-hmm. Which is related to meditation.
Yeah, but meditation is something we all do, and it's a really important part of our lives and what we do. So what exactly is meditation, guys?
It's when you sit down and just like chill out for, you know, 20, 30 minutes, right?
Chill out.
Are you asking me what chill out means?
Yeah, what does chill out generally mean?
To chill or chill out means just to relax and kind of just do nothing, which is not what meditation really is. I'm just joking.
Okay, so meditation, it's sort of like, it doesn't need to be for 10, 20, or 30 minutes. It can be for like 2 minutes or 1 minute even, right?
Mm-hmm.
But generally, it's to develop a daily practice where you stop and you work with your mind.
What does that mean, to work with your mind? Is that kind of like to work with a hammer?
It depends on what you're doing with a hammer, but it just means to stop and close your eyes. Maybe you can have your eyes open too, but look within and to start, yeah, work with your mind, to start working with your thoughts.
Hmm.
So look within.
Okay.
But it's not like silencing your mind completely.
This is
necessarily.
When people think about meditation, they think like, om, right? And
they think about like a mantra. Like
to think about religion too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they think you have to silence your mind, but the thing is, most people have a hard time silencing their mind because the mind thinks. This is what is natural.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to silence your mind to be successful in meditation. This will happen the better you get, the more you do it, but I think you'll start to see impacts in many other ways in your life.
Yeah. One way that I like to think of meditation, maybe this differs. I think everybody has their own practice or their own way of doing it. I'm not really too sure. But how I like to think about it is I would sit down. I have a practice of generally like 20 minutes a day, sometimes twice a day. On and off. I've been more focused recently, but in the past...
On and off?
On and off means like I do it a lot sometimes, and sometimes I get kind of lazy or I lose the practice or I'm too busy doing other stuff. So on and off means like sometimes yes, and then sometimes I'm off. I'm not doing it as much. But how I generally think about it is I'm sitting down and I'm observing my thoughts and I'm
uh-huh.
observing what's happening in my mind. And doing that after like a quite a long period of time now I'm kind of like, hey, what is that is observing?
Yeah. Who is it that thinks these thoughts?
Exactly.
The thoughts exist, but what is observing? What's the space behind that?
Yeah.
That's kind of a deep concept. If you really think about it, it's like, what is that?
Yeah. And for me, that has no real connection to any kind of religion or Buddhism or Zen Buddhism and stuff like that. It's just, I'm just observing my thoughts, and it gives me more of a power to be able to control my thoughts more. Like if you're, I'm observing that I'm getting worried or stressed or whatever, something like that, and then I can kind of change that because I'm conscious of that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just me. I don't know. What are your guys' experiences like?
Exactly. There's a this Indian mystic named Ramana Maharshi, and he talked about the main question that leads people to really deep levels of insight is, who am I? And you start
mm-hmm.
asking yourself that question, who am I? And you must go be beyond your mind.
Mm-hmm.
It's what's out observing your mind. And to separate yourself from that and observe, like you said, when you start having difficult emotional states where you get mad or upset or impatient, right? This
mm-hmm.
is one of the, I think when people start meditating, they gain much more control over those moments when they're impatient, for really stupid, for really stupid reasons. Like I remember... Like, I used to get really impatient in traffic when I was in my car. Or when I was waiting in line.
That's a big one, right? The traffic. For some reason, people get... in English, we have a term called road rage, where people get very frustrated and very angry, even often very violent, because they're just so stressed in traffic.
Uh-huh.
It's a great time to meditate when you're stuck in traffic, right?
Yeah.
With your eyes open.
Yeah. Well, if you're in a traffic jam, you're stopped anyway.
Maybe you just might get honked out a bit.
Honked out?
Honked at.
Honked at.
Yes.
What would that mean, Mr. V?
Honk is like when you press the button on the wheel, which is like what you use to steer to change the direction you're going in. Mm-hmm. It's like a button you press to make a loud noise when you're trying to get someone's attention or tell them that they're driving badly or...
I get honked all the time because I have a bumper sticker that says, honk if you're horny.
This is a common bumper sticker. This is a common bumper sticker that you see in Australia, especially.
What is a bumper sticker? That probably needs an explanation.
What's a bumper? What's a sticker?
Bumper is like the metal part on the back and the front of the car that kind of helps to prevent the car from getting too damaged if you have a collision.
A sticker is something that you stick on there, right? Mm-hmm. It's an adhesive, right?
Exactly, yeah. So bumper stickers, generally people put little advertisements or quotes or sayings.
Political and, shit.
Yeah, so people behind them in traffic will see their bumper sticker.
So honk if you're horny is a common, kind of a famous, fun bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Honk if you are sexually excited. Yeah. It rhymes, right? Anyway, coming back to the main point, how long have you guys been meditating?
Just one thing that's kind of relevant here is... Right now we're recording a podcast and there's a lot of background noises. And sometimes when you meditate, me and Ethan are talking about this today, sometimes when I sit down and then there's like lots of traffic, lots of background noise.
Construction
like you can hear right now. What did you say about that this morning?
Oh, I was saying that like you can actually use that, it's something that kind of disturbs you, but you can actually use it as a focal point, something to focus on. Instead of like reacting to it, like Justin was saying, in a negative way, you just kind of observe it without any sort of like negative prejudgment of that.
Or you observe your own reaction to it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's even like, why does that annoy me? Why does that make me angry?
Even more interestingly, I mean, thinking about that, you almost...
Hey guys, I'm getting really pissed off, man. I'm going to go and tell that guy to shut the hell up right now.
Because you always have the same internal noise happening too, right? You're always thinking about... If you sit down and try to actually work with your mind, you're going to discover that you are going to think about yesterday. You're going to think about tomorrow, the future, with anxiety. You're going to think about yesterday with...
Today, if it's a morning meditation.
You're going to think about your desires. You're going to think about your fears. And you're going to go in many different directions, and you're going to forget that you're not... You're going to forget that you're actually sitting there in the moment, right? Chad's reading a book right now called The Power of Now, right?
I am.
It's a really good book. I've read it before. Powerful book. It's about staying present, right?
I'm not actually reading it. I'm listening to the audiobook, which is a great way to practice your English, too. Mm-hmm. Download an audiobook, and you can just listen to it when you're on the bus. Like, when you're not listening to our podcast, of course. Definitely prioritize our podcast, then the book. But sorry, go on. Power of Now.
It's The Power of Now. It could be a book that shakes you loose. Kind of a book that catalyzes, right? A new... kind of perspective. Maybe it causes a paradigm shift for some people.
What does shake someone loose? What does that mean?
When you shake somebody, you grab somebody and you shake them.
They can't see what you're doing.
I thought Ethan was going to make a noise.
Justin was just shaking me.
Yeah.
Okay. Shake me, I'll make the noise.
Okay, so you shake somebody loose, it means people are generally, they have their way of looking at the world, right? Their perspective. And a lot of times you're kind of stuck, right? What does stuck mean?
Stuck means that you are stuck. you're trapped somewhere. You can't leave.
You're locked into a certain way, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like in this case, if you're shaking me loose, you're kind of stuck in a paradigm or a mindset. A way of thinking. And when Justin was shaking me loose, I started thinking, oh, maybe I'm wrong.
So for me, just to give you guys a really summarized version of kind of my story, I was like kind of like really maybe like a fundamentalist in my perspective on religion, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of Christian, but I had a very rigid perspective. And then I became sort of an atheist at that point. And then all of a sudden I read a philosopher, an Indian philosopher named Krishnamurti.
Mm.
And the moment I read this like first paragraph of this book, it shook me loose. And in a similar way that I think The Power of Now shakes people loose.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that's... It's not even related to religion.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of like this open, dynamic perspective on spirituality in the world, even like not even spirituality, but just human experience and our ability to have a transcendental experience with life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think like while meditation can like tie in really well with if you have a religious practice, it's also just a kind of mindfulness practice. So it's kind of not trying to silence your mind, but like sitting down every morning or whenever you decide to meditate and just trying to be like present in that moment. So Justin was saying before, like a lot of times when you meditate, you're thinking about yesterday, you're thinking about what you have to do today, but it's kind of, at least like what I tend to do when I meditate is when I get into those streams of thoughts, I'll just try to remind myself these are thoughts. Mm-hmm. And I kind of try to come back to like the center.
So it's beyond your thoughts. It's beyond your beliefs, right? So you're actually cultivating that real experience with your consciousness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that can complement a religious practice, but it's also, if you're an atheist, it's also great for like a way to be present in the moment, to increase your focus, to be more present in everything you do throughout the day.
There's a philosopher, his name's kind of a philosopher, he's a neuroscientist named Sam Harris. And I don't agree with everything this guy says, but he has a lot of really great ideas. But especially with, he meditates, and he wrote a book about, it's called Waking Up, and it takes meditation out of like the religious context. And the guy's an atheist. He's like one of the most famous atheists out there, and just talks about like the real experience of meditation.
That sounded funny. One of the most famous atheists there are.
Yeah. I don't consider myself an atheist. Maybe some people would consider me an atheist, but this book, it just kind of takes meditation and shows from a neuroscientific perspective, actually using science, because there's a lot of science just showing how when people meditate, their brain changes. Their actual ability to engage in the world and be more productive, be more effective, be more compassionate. Less reactive to the world, it really, really deepens. It's like weight training, in some sense, like lifting weights, exercising your mind.
I mean, just like imagine, you can imagine the benefit of this in your own life if like you drive every day and you get really like angry, you know, just because another person is maybe not driving well or you miss a red light or something. But you can actually, meditation helps you to kind of reflect on that and be like, is this really so important? You know, and it helps you to not like react to those little things, which if you can just get that kind of practice, maybe not all the time, but a few times a day, it's going to improve your quality of life substantially. Just like your general, if you're meditating every day, you will find that you'll be much happier in general, I think.
So just, I wrote an article about how meditation can improve your life and your English. I wrote this article kind of just to organize my thoughts and help people understand, because people have some misconceptions about what meditation is, and just kind of, I just wanted to share with you guys really quick what meditation is not and what meditation is. We've been talking about this, but in kind of a structured way. So,
Justin, you're such a fundamentalist with all your structured ways and, you know, rigid mindset. You know, you need to meditate some more, dude.
I did not meditate today, actually, because I woke up really sore. So, my bad.
Excuses.
Yeah. I don't think when the Buddha was sitting under the Bodhi tree, do you think he was really sore?
You do get really sore if you like meditate for long periods of time, too. All
right. Well, what you got for us, man?
So meditation is not controlling your thoughts or trying to stop them. In this sense, people think you're in there and you must eliminate your thoughts, right? Like we said, it's just going in there and starting to work with your mind. You're going to get distracted. Accept that. When you start, you might get distracted every 10 seconds. You might only spend, if you meditate for 10 minutes, maybe only 5 seconds present the entire time. But every time you get distracted, the main idea is to come back. And it's almost like your mind, it's like you're a loving father or mother to a child. And so that child, when it falls down, you just help it back up. And you bring it back. And the same thing with your mind. When you get distracted, don't get angry with yourself. Like, this is one of the main first steps, is like actually becoming friends with your own mind.
I think something that's important too to mention, because we said in the beginning that it's like not trying to completely silence your mind, but you do have, like, when you meditate, you have a focal point. So that can either be like the breath, it can be noise, it can be there's like open-eyed meditation where you watch like a candle, or it could be like a mantra. Like, the most famous one is Om, but if you do transcendental meditation, then I believe that you get your own mantra if you actually do like the official course.
What is Om? Justin made a joke earlier when he said that people think that meditation is sitting down and being Om.
So it's a mantra, which is like a sound or a word that you repeat over and over again in your head. And I forget what Om actually means, but I think it's like
it's a sound. It's kind of like the last sound of the universe, that silence, right? But it does actually have like a physical effect. That's just something like Om. Actually, if you do that, you'll notice you start feeling better. It might clear your consciousness and really calm your mind down a little bit. That's not saying you should do that, because it might just maybe.
I think you have to experiment a lot too, because there's many different types of meditation out there, and like when I first started, I experimented with a few different kinds to try to find like what helped me to like get to that kind of calm space.
But what Ethan's talking about here is a mantra or counting. I think sometimes it can be difficult to follow your breath, especially for beginners. So maybe it could be good to count, have a mantra like Om Mani Padme Hum is a Buddhist mantra that's kind of famous. Mm-hmm. It means like the flower in the heart of the lotus, or the jewel in the heart of the lotus, or something like that. But you can have a prayer, like if you're religious or whatever religion you are, this is gonna probably improve your practice, improve your connection with that divine energy. And so I had the prayer of Saint Francis, which is the Catholic prayer. I'm not Catholic. I grew up Catholic, but that's a really cool prayer for me because it's very universal. It's like, Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Mm-hmm. So to be a peaceful person. And so I just repeated this prayer over and over and over. And when I got distracted, I just came back. Oh, Justin, you're wandering. You're distracted. Come back. Mm-hmm. And then I'd repeat the prayer until I got distracted again. I'd come back. And then by the end of that, I used to meditate for like when I started for like 15 minutes. And I realized it took me about 15 minutes and there would be sort of a shift in my mind to a higher frequency. My mind became more calm. I became more relaxed. And in this, I felt this in the world too. Mm-hmm. And then I left and I felt this in my relationships too. I'd just be more patient, more compassionate, more empathetic.
Mm-hmm. Funny you said a word there which resonated with me was frequency, because it's like one thing, I don't say any prayers, I don't know any prayers or any mantras, but like the Om thing, like the Om, I think like that how it's kind of like a guitar. When you tune a guitar, it's like out of tune, so it's like boom, 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 and it hits that right frequency, and like, okay, I tuned it to standard E, mm-hmm. And then like you hit that frequency. And I think sometimes with meditation, I feel like a similar thing. Like my thoughts are all over the place. I can't I think of one thing, then my past, my future has some anxieties or fears appear. But then suddenly I hit this like I hit the note.
You kind of like tune yourself.
Exactly, and I'm tuning my mind, right? And it's just like it just feels very clear and very peaceful, and I can just kind of sit there for, another 10, 15 minutes or so.
Hmm.
Not too sure if that's...
No, that's what you're saying. That's exactly it. I would say probably the first step, I wouldn't necessarily expect that, although that can happen at the beginning, but the first step is making friends with your mind, and so mm-hmm. maybe not having those emotional reactions. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who are really hard on themselves tend to, when they first start, they get angry, or they're like... they get distracted and they're like, why can't I meditate? Mm-hmm. Justin, you always get distracted. And that's actually the problem.
That's kind of detrimental to the whole process, right?
And then you realize, yeah, exactly.
Detrimental?
Detrimental is like harmful, right?
Mm-hmm. And that's the problem, because you're doing that in life in every single moment. It's like meditation is like almost like a mirror for your life, like a microcosm, smaller version of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you see your mind doing that while you're meditating, you're doing that with everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so true. But getting to that point where you can be friends with yourself, then it's a good base for actually silencing your mind, like you're talking about.
I think and something else that me and Ethan were talking about this just before doing this podcast too, this is probably like another topic for a different podcast, But it's kind of like you're getting into the zone, is uh-huh. like what we say in English. Yeah, in English. And I think that's something that you can take away. Oh my God.
Who are these guys? What are they doing here?
What the hell is going on here, man? Tell them we're trying to meditate in here. Let's just pause it for 1 second. And we're back.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Justin has just royally kicked some butt.
Yeah, that guy, he won't be bothering us anymore.
He was a little bit reactive there, but...
Yeah, maybe he can meditate now that Justin...
I didn't meditate today. What we didn't tell you about meditation, the more that you do it, the more that you need it. Just kidding.
How is that, though? What do you mean?
It's like a drug.
Oh, okay.
It calms you down temporarily.
Okay.
I'm just joking about that.
It is sometimes, though, when you get like really used to it. It's like you sit down for your normal time. Like normally I do like 20 minutes every morning. And like sometimes it's just like the bell goes off at the end of it. And it's just like it's not enough.
Mm.
It's just like I wish there was another 5 or 10 minutes, you know. Yeah. To have those days where you really need to go deep.
That's kind of like hitting the snooze button. It's like, oh, just 10 more minutes. Just 10 more minutes.
But sometimes you meditate and you would actually have a hard time. I mean, even if you're an experienced meditator.
Mm-hmm.
But the act of actually doing it is really important because it will make your day better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it depends on the day, what's going on in your head, whether you feel like this feels like forever or if it goes by like that.
Mm-hmm. What did I mean when I said hitting the snooze button? Sometimes we say stuff and we forget that it could be difficult for an English learner.
I don't
just
know.
Really quickly, before, let's just let them know that this is actually the next day.
Oh man, we wanted to make it feel real. Real life.
Yeah. The construction, actually, we couldn't record it yesterday.
Yeah, we had to stop. They're still constructing today, but it seems like it's a little quieter, so hopefully there's not too much background noise.
Yeah, so hitting the snooze button.
So it's like on an alarm clock, it's probably the same word in like different languages, or like the same thing on the button, but it's like when you hit that button on your alarm that makes it stop, it puts another like 10 minutes on the alarm.
Because snooze means to sleep, right?
Yeah. In the previous and the soon to come, depends on when you're listening to this podcast. Maybe it's already live, but it's similar to Real Life Global Platform where you hit extend if you're having a good connection with your partner and you can just extend for your conversation.
Yeah, another 3 minutes.
Yeah, and hit means to press, like to hit the button.
Mm-hmm.
And so just another expression for snooze, you snooze, you lose.
Yeah.
You heard that before?
Yeah, I've heard that before, of course.
You snooze,
that's
you lose.
That's a famous expression.
Yeah. You snooze, you lose is like if you don't act on an opportunity, you lose out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you lose out, you miss out.
Uh-huh.
Another common word is miss, people confuse. I remember we used to say this when we were living in Chile, and if I was like on the computer and you guys were like serving dinner, but like, Chad, you snooze, you lose. It means you're going to eat all my food.
Yeah.
If I don't take action and go and eat it, you guys would eat it.
We're pretty voracious eaters.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, awesome.
I think, not to lose our train of thought, what we were talking about before the construction thing was flow state and how meditation can maybe sometimes help you get into these altered states of performance.
It quiets your mind a lot, so it really makes things a lot more subtle, right?
Mm-hmm. I think we used the expression in the zone, but I don't think we actually described what that means.
Hmm. It's true. You want to describe it really quickly, Mr. V?
In the zone means that like you're in a very, well, it's similar to flow state, right? Is being in a very focused state of mind.
There's actually a couple books about this. One of them is called Flow. I forget the guy's name, like Mihai Chikmi, I don't know, it's a really difficult name.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of the pioneering books of positive psychology. There's a lot of research around this, like what actually puts people in these states of optimal psychological performance.
What do you mean by pioneering?
Pioneer means to be like the first.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy did all this research, I think in Chicago, in the United States. And there was another book after that I know Chad has listened to. It's called The Rise of Superman.
Listen to it again because it was an audiobook, like The Power of Now. Great way to spend your convenient moments when you're not listening to the real life radio podcast.
But this is really important for learning, too. It's the same thing, because if you actually can put yourself in a more optimal psychological state, you learn much quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Because a flow state, you have fun. Mm-hmm. And so the argument is you have all these triggers flow triggers, right?
Yeah.
For example, one of them is...
What's a trigger, just so people know?
Like, a trigger is something that it activates something, right?
It's like on the gun, you have the trigger that you pull to make it shoot.
Exactly.
So, like, in learning, for example, one of the triggers is having the right amount of challenge. Mm-hmm. Just like a guitar, if it's too tight, it breaks.
And so string.
If your challenge, if what you're learning is too difficult, it's not motivating, mm-hmm. right? But if it's too easy, it's not motivating. Mm-hmm. So the trigger is finding them just the right amount of challenge, right?
Yeah. It's like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, you know? The porridge is too hot, the porridge is too cold, and then the porridge is just right.
Another one is like you need things to be...
You guys know what porridge is?
Yeah, it's oatmeal.
Okay, cool.
But that's a really good book. So The Rise of Superman.
Well, Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
that's a good book too, yeah. Anyways, but meditation, coming back to that, meditation like really calms your mind down and it makes it easier to enter into a flow state, mm-hmm. which is better for learning.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there was something I was going to say about the flow state. I guess it's just better for learning. Oh, yeah, because it also... I heard someone saying, I think it was actually Jason Silver, saying that, obviously he gets this from a other famous philosopher maybe, that nowadays, one of the most hardest thing, one of the, I can't remember exactly how he said it because he's so good with his words, but it's something about holding your attention on something nowadays is really difficult because we're always like distracted from
the ping, the ping, right?
Ping?
The ping is this idea of like, it's even like a phrase, hey, can you ping me?
Can you ping me? Okay.
Ping me when you're... So this ping is like... It's really the sound you get. It's like ding.
Okay. So is that where it comes from?
I think so. That's okay. At least in my mind.
Okay.
But that's what a ping is. Mm-hmm. And so constantly being like notified.
Yeah. Especially on your phone. You get a WhatsApp. You get a mm-hmm. text message. Missed call.
So easy to get distracted, right? Especially if you're learning something. Then something like ping on my phone. Oh, my Facebook. Oh, someone's calling me.
And neuroscientifically, we actually get like a rush of... dopamine or something. I don't know if it's dopamine or serotonin.
Something like that, probably.
But we're actually being programmed so that, just like the dog, like, what is it? The
Pavlov's dog.
Pavlov's dog. What is it?
Every time there's a bell.
You ring the bell and then the dog salivates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's kind of happening to us with all these, like, these new technologies, right?
And so meditation sort of gives you the ability to step in between stimulus and response. To step in between kind of that reactivity. That is constantly being conditioned into your brain. Mm-hmm. But
at least being more aware, like, oh, I'm getting very distracted by this stuff. I'm not learning as well, maybe my English, because I'm too focused on my WhatsApp or Facebook or whatever is your distraction.
Especially because, like, we always have our phone right in our pocket or next to wherever we're working, so it's so easy just to, like, every time it goes off, pick it up and find a distraction.
Yeah.
But we watched, Chad and I watched a few weeks ago a talk on mindfulness at SEED, which is where we're working right now, this program we're in for Real Life English. And this guy came in and kind of explained it, a lot of the benefits for business and how this increases dramatically productivity. How there's a lot of science, like a growing base of scientific evidence in the United States, I guess, like exponentially there are more studies. That are studying people that are meditating over weeks and months and years, and they're just physically, biologically changes that happen. Mm-hmm. Like your DNA actually changes.
Your DNA changes?
Yeah.
In what ways?
It starts to change the way it expresses itself. Some of the like dormant DNA genes become active when you start meditating. Other ones become dormant. So maybe like destructive, like reactive parts of your... your genetic expression become dormant and then more healthy, aware, conscious.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like every time, not that I've met many people like this, but I've seen some of them talking online and things like this. It's like people that have, maybe you might use the term enlightened, people who have reached a really high level of whatever that means to be enlightened. They seem like they're very... just like they just love everything, you know, they're very positive, they feels like they don't have that thing inside of them that is judging or anxious or all these kinds of emotions. They seem to kind of lose this a little bit, wouldn't you say? Like what's the name of that guy who lives in Hawaii and he's a ex-Harvard professor and he became this kind of spiritual Ram Dass?
Oh, Ram Dass.
Yeah.
That's a whole different topic.
Okay.
That he lives in Hawaii?
Doesn't he? I think he has some retreats in Hawaii where he does certain programs and stuff like that.
Okay.
That
guy,
it's not Leo Babuda?
No.
It's like Zen Habits?
No.
No way.
No.
Totally different guy that... yeah, I think
Ram Dass is a psychedelic guy, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But, just bringing... We can't talk about this without bringing up Ken Wilber.
Okay. Wilber.
Ken Wilber is a philosopher, is an American philosopher, and all of us have read and studied him. But
Justin studied him a lot, right? He's got a little bit of a man crush.
What's a man crush? A bromance?
No, yeah, yeah. Well, different. Bromance is more personal, right?
Yeah. I don't have a man crush on Ken Wilber, but I did learn a lot from this philosopher.
Well, a man crush? Like, a crush is when you have, like, certain romantic feelings for a person, and like, oh, I have a crush for that girl, or whatever. A crush on, yeah. So it's actually not a word that we use a lot in Australia, actually. I learned this word growing up watching, like, American TV shows and stuff.
So anyway...
yeah, back to your man crush.
So Ken Wilber, basically, one of the main ideas that it's really important for what we're talking about is this idea of spiral dynamics. And I'll link a video on this, too. We'll link a video in the show notes. But basically, it's this idea that individuals and cultures go through stages of development. So if you think about when you were a kid, your perspective on the world was completely different. It's almost like your consciousness is like a lens. It's like you have different glasses for different, like, lenses for different phases of your life. And so as you go through life, a child is born and they grow through psychological stages until they become like a fully functioning adult. And these are mapped in Western psychology. And all these different psychological systems kind of map how people unfold mm-hmm. through stage by stage by stage. And
stages of
psychological development.
States.
Yeah, like there's
conscious levels of consciousness.
Yeah, pretty
much. Perceptions of the world.
Stages of consciousness, levels, you can say. Mm-hmm. But Eastern philosophy, Western philosophy sort of denies the transpersonal stages. Right?
What is a transpersonal stage?
Well, what you're talking about, people who actually these stages of like enlightenment and increased consciousness.
Mm.
And so some of the Eastern systems, and maybe you can make an argument that like Buddhism is actually mapping out the transcendental stages of development. And so if you put that together with the Western model of psychology mm-hmm. and all the stages that a child goes through,
mm-hmm.
but the Western model, the problem is it really denies that there is evolution past the stage of being a rational adult,
mm-hmm.
right? So anyway, there have been studies that have shown that you analyze people, you evaluate the kind of their psychological stage, and that they at the age of about 25, we develop naturally up until that point. We're constantly changing, growing, expanding our consciousness. But at about 25 years old, we stop kind of growing and we stabilize where we're at
mm-hmm.
psychologically. But yeah. There's only one thing that's been empirically demonstrated to keep pushing people forward through the stages after the age of 25, and that's meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And so they say if you meditate for an hour a day, which is a lot of time,
mm-hmm.
but you make big leaps in consciousness, which means that like every couple of years, you're looking at the world from a different perspective because your consciousness is developing.
You think that we get stuck in that like 25 and stop growing is also because of the society we live in? You generally have you graduate university, you start working at that age, and it's like now you have to just go and make money and make a family and support them, and that's your focus from now on.
Yeah, you just get caught up a lot of the times in the rat race, right?
What is the rat race?
The rat race is like when people are just crazy, the heads are down, they're working, they're just trying to get ahead in life, climb the ladder, right?
Mm-hmm. I think like also kind of, at least from an American perspective, like people when they go to university and just like high school through all their education, there's kind of like a disdain for learning once they graduate. Like they don't want to look at any more like textbooks or any more learning. And so it's like instead of like schools really cultivating a deep love for learning in students, it kind of creates the opposite. So I've noticed a lot, like a lot of my friends, once they finish university, they just lose that that curiosity to learn about new things and to develop.
But this is like, that's really important what you're saying, and I definitely agree with that. But I think this is more like actually having a practice to actually like look within yourself. And so mm-hmm. what meditation does, when you meditate, it sort of like breaks you loose from that, your rigid perspective on the world.
Break you loose meaning?
It's like we said, shake you loose, right?
Oh yeah, true. We said shake you loose.
It sort of like loosens the kind of your perspective, so you can open up.
Yeah, I think like break loose. The first image that appeared in my head was maybe if you were like a prisoner and you're chained to like someone. You like you break the chain and you can go and do what you're free.
Yeah, exactly that. So this idea of spiral dynamics is kind of like a spiral going up, a spiral of. So you don't grow vertically up, but you grow kind of like in a spiral track. And so what meditation does every day, it sort of greases the wheels, greases the tracks.
Grease meaning?
To put like a lubricant on there, so it moves easier, right?
And Ethan explained lubricant recently, didn't you? The last podcast, I think.
We did talk about that in another podcast.
Yeah. And so if you go in, if every day you actually go into it, you sort of like open up your mind, and it kind of relaxes your perception on the world, and it gives you the ability to grow and kind of adapt new perspectives much easier.
Yeah. Sometimes you might even just like freak out, because sometimes I've like been meditating and then like if you put everything in perspective, like, oh my God, I'm just like one person in a world of like 8 billion people on a planet of a solar system of like 10 other planets inside a huge Milky Way, inside of this huge galaxy in this universe that we don't know when it ends. And you're like, what the hell am I doing here, man?
We have to play them out with Carl Sagan's A Pale Blue Dot.
Oh, A Pale Blue Dot.
Yeah.
That is good.
There's a video. You have to watch the video. We can play you out with the audio, though, right? Mm-hmm. But the video is the Hubble spacecraft going out in space, taking a picture of the Earth from varying distances, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's a cool thing to think about when you're kind of in that meditative state. Because when you put yourself into that perspective, where you're just like a tiny little molecule in this huge, vast universe, you're like, why do I care about that douchebag that cut me off in traffic?
Douchebag? Douchebag?
Douchebag, again, a very American term. It just means like, I guess, like an asshole?
Jerk.
Yeah. I think we've explained this in the past. You can probably go back if you listened to all of them.
You said douchebag or he's a douche.
Yeah. You don't want to be a douchebag or a douche.
No.
But what you're saying there, I remember some of my first transcendental experiences at home, like looking up at the stars. And you kind of look up and you're like, well, what's out there? And your mind travels and it short circuits kind of like your ability, your logical perception of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's sort of that limit between the conscious and what you're conscious of, what you know and what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's divine.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And that's something that I think like we're all very disconnected from, because we live like in a big city here in Brazil, for example. You can't see any stars. Like at nighttime, it's just like there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. But I think for people that live in like, I'm not sure where you lived, in a kind of a farming area or a more remote place, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was sort of out in the country, but there isn't so much starlight these days because the city has
pollution.
It's come closer. The lights.
The lights from the city. Yeah, exactly. But I think someone who like every night they see like that huge like all those stars and the moon, like that they're always contemplating that because it's just so obvious. It's like you can't escape that because it's so bright.
And kind of flipping that back around to our topic today, it's the same thing when you look within. The thing is, we just don't look within. We don't actually give ourselves time to really explore our inner world.
You kind of looked within today because you went to the dentist, right? She's looking like within your mouth.
It's true. If I sound like maybe like I'm mentally disabled, it's because I have they put some anesthetic on my tooth, so I'm having a hard time like moving my facial muscles.
Yeah, yeah. Looks kind of funny as well.
I have like a crooked smile.
Yeah.
But
yeah, sorry, go on. Looking within.
Yeah, that's it. So this is kind of what we're really, really, I guess, something that's really impacted our lives. So looking within, it's like science supports it. If you learn how this technique of meditation, it will completely change your life. If you give it a chance.
And your English.
Yeah, I would say how can people actually apply this to their English?
I would say, like, first of all, like it'll help your concentration a lot. And I've noticed a particular type of student, especially, like, I had a student before who was kind of like spacey.
What does spacey mean?
Distracted.
Mm-hmm.
And I encouraged her to meditate, and like all of my students, like half of my students that I ever taught, like started meditating because I talked so much about it. But she started meditating, and all of a sudden she had much better concentration. She would listen better, and she was remembering the words a lot better, and so her English instantly improved, probably about 25%.
Because you're less distracted.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably makes you more conscious of the why you're learning. Because sometimes, oh, I have English class because everyone else is having English class. But when you can really focus and you have a very strong, you know, you actually think, why do I do everything in life? You know, why do I learn English? Why do I play guitar? Why do I work at the profession that I work in? And then, like, you start contemplating that stuff and like, yeah, because I really want to learn English or I really want to do that, have that job, whatever, right? Or maybe you would just quit your job. And why the hell am I doing this shitty ass job?
Gonna run into the woods, build a cabin, and just contemplate the stars.
Yeah, yeah. If you do that, it's not our fault if you know you if you get eaten by a bear or something like that, you know, in the woods.
I would also say, like, for speaking English, it can be really effective because, like, it actually helps you to, as we were saying, get in the zone so that you're not as affected by being nervous. Or even if you feel nervous, you're kind of able to be able to come back to being in that moment and concentrating on your breathing and move past that feeling.
You recognize it as just a feeling, though, right?
Yeah.
That when you get scared, that fear, it's just it's not you. It's just kind of a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And if you recognize that, you're not being controlled by it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good stuff, man. This is a great podcast. I guess we could talk about this topic for a long time, but maybe if they want to learn more about this...
We'll put some resources in the show notes.
Mm-hmm. We could maybe just give them... We have like some quick tips written down here that we could give them.
Okay. So how about this? We'll give them the tips... And then play them out with the blue dot. Little play... What is it called? The Pale Blue Dot.
Mm-hmm.
By Carl Sagan, who is an astrophysicist, right? Was an astrophysicist. I think he passed away. Am I right?
Yeah, he did a lot to make astrophysics very popular. Mm-hmm. Astronomy.
Mm-hmm. He made it cool.
Yeah.
All right, so what are the tips, Mr.
So
B?
Ethan's going to... He's going to finish with a guided meditation...
Just close your eyes in your car, you know, don't worry about the traffic around you.
It's not real.
but seriously, so there's like a bunch of different apps out there for your phone. I've used maybe a couple. I haven't used one, but I've heard it recommended a lot, called Headspace, and they have actually a program of basically, if you're wanting to start meditating, it helps to guide you through 10 days of doing 10 minutes a day. And it's supposed to be very effective if you're wanting to build a habit. Really, if you want to get into meditation, more than, like we were saying, not to worry so much about clearing your head, much more than that is just getting the habit of sitting down every day and closing your eyes and just being there for, you know, disconnecting from the world for a few minutes a day.
Mm-hmm.
If you can start doing that, I think, with this app for 10 days, it'll help you to just continue making that a part of your daily life.
And a little tip, like, don't pay attention so much to your experience during the meditation. Don't use that to judge the results. Pay attention to actually how you interact with life.
For sure.
And people around you and just different circumstances.
And I always think the morning is a really good time, especially if you're trying to build this habit, because it's like, you get it done first thing before any of the distractions in your life can come in and basically build resistance from actually starting that habit. So I would recommend that, or you can do it right before bed. Same time every day, though, is going to be the most effective.
Go ahead.
You were talking about maybe using a song.
Yeah. There's a podcast that we all listen to. It's called the Tim Ferriss Podcast, which is a really great podcast about... business, life, and everything, but he talks a lot about meditation. I guess, like, he interviews some of the most successful people in the world, and like 70% of them have some sort of mindfulness practice.
Yeah,
what he was saying. But
he finds out these really successful people and interviews them and finds out some of their daily practices and what makes them really successful.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it be like a businessman, a sports, an athlete, or something like that, right?
Yeah, and this guy started meditating and it completely changed his life, but. One of the tips that he gives on there, just a really, it's a hack for meditation. What he says...
What's a hack?
It's kind of like a shortcut, something... Because people come into meditation thinking, like, that they need to make it some big holy experience. But really, try to build the habit first. And what he says, advice that he gives, he says is very effective. I've never tried this, but just taking a song that calms you down, that you like, and listening to that song while you pay attention to your breath. When you get distracted, just come back. remind yourself to come back and mm-hmm. listen to that song every day until you build the habit, and then you can start expanding the habit mm-hmm. using like Headspace or other resources.
There's another app, just to plug someone's app. Remember that guy Michael we met in Rio for the Rio Games? He was making a new app called, I think it's just called Calm.
Oh, I've heard of Calm.
You've heard of Calm? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Well, we met the guy who created that. He's a super cool guy.
It's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, there you go. If you go to Calm, write them an email and say, "Hey, we learned about your app through Real Life English." Cool, man. Well, any more tips before we wrap up this podcast?
And just one final thing, I'd say, if you have a practice and you really like it, you want to go deeper, there is something called Vipassana. These meditation retreats that are 10 days, and it's something I've done it a couple times. Ethan, you've done it, right?
Yeah, I did it once. It's definitely very, very impactful. I think it can change your entire life.
Yeah, don't get.
What is it exactly? Just give them a 1 minute review of what Vipassana is.
It's a retreat. So a retreat is basically usually something to help you unplug from your normal day-to-day life. So, and they have these in almost every country. I think there's usually more than one, even. And you go probably the capital of where you're living or something. It's a big city. And they'll have like a retreat outside of it in kind of a quiet and natural area. And you just go there for basically 10 days. You're meditating 10 hours a day, and it's all guided and everything.
You don't speak.
And you're not allowed to speak until the 10th day.
It's the last day. It's all vegetarian food. It's a very rigorous process. But
yeah.
So 10 hours a day for 9 days without speaking to any person.
Yeah.
So you're very kind of isolating yourself from like everything, right?
Yeah, it's very internal too, because like you're not supposed to look people in the eyes. You're not supposed to, you know, really even interact with people other than if you have some problem, you can talk to the people who kind of like lead the retreat.
But you're learning psychotechnology, this meditation, this specific technique called Vipassana, which is actually, it's non-denominational. It's non, like you have people from every religion going pretty much. Mm-hmm. Even atheists, but the technique itself supposedly comes from an unbroken lineage from the time of the Buddha, from the Buddha mm-hmm. himself. So you're able to start experiencing some of the really deep benefits of meditation over a short amount of time, and gives you a completely different perspective on the world.
Because the Buddha sat 10 days as well, right? Under the Bodhi tree or something?
No, he sat a lot longer.
That's it?
Yeah. They have these retreats.
You guys
too.
Are being lazy then.
Yeah. They have these retreats too. I think they have a 30-day one, and I think they even have a 90-day one location. So
that would be pretty crazy.
It's for me, like, just meeting people, and one of the ways I evaluate different programs is by looking at the people who do them, mm-hmm. who've been doing them for a long time. And the people who have been doing Vipassana a long time, I'm always very impressed by them. Just mm-hmm. they're kind of what you were saying, Chad, about people who have, you sense that they just have this deeper, unreactive peace about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can cool. really, really see the transformation.
And their English is perfect. All right, guys. Well, let's wrap it up there, all right?
Yeah.
Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this podcast. Hopefully you're going to start testing out some meditation, whether it be just 1 or 2 minutes a day or 20 or maybe 90 days without talking. Or
if you guys have any questions about any of this stuff, feel free to email me at justin@reallifeglobal.com or respond to our emails.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or either of us, Chad@reallifeglobal.com.
Ethan@reallifeglobal.com.
And if you're listening to this from iTunes or Stitcher or some other podcast app or whatever, don't forget to check out our blog, reallifeglobal.com. You see all of our articles, we have videos, all of our podcasts there too, lots of free ebooks, and our fluency course, Fluent with Friends.
And where are the show notes today going to be at?
The show notes are going to be at reallifeglobal.com/meditation. What should we call this?
Do we have meditation already?
How about meditating?
Meditating. Okay. So reallifeglobal.com/meditating. Awesome, guys. Well, hope you enjoyed it. And let's play you out with the man, Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like it. It's good. Let's do that from now on.
From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on a mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors, so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings, how eager they are to kill one another, how fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit? Yes. Settle? Not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.